Welcome to But Why Though, the podcast, a roundtable conversation about all things pop culture. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm joined this week by Kate.
Hi.
And Matt.
Hello.
This week, we are going to talk about casual viewing, the concept, the genre, the Netflix of it all. This was largely inspired by Will Tavlin's Casual Viewing from N Plus One magazine, and we strongly encourage you to read that in full for yourself. It's like a very broad overview of Netflix's history and the impact. I'm not going to say successfully, just that what they have done to media feels like a fair way to talk about it. Have you guys read the full thing?
Yes. No, I thought it was probably one of my favorite things that's come out recently, honestly.
Yeah, I really liked it. Matt, did you get a chance to read it? The whole... It's long.
It's definitely a long article. I didn't read the whole thing, but I definitely honed in kind of like this casual viewing parts that they really kind of focused on and everything.
Yeah, I thought it was really, that part was really interesting. But before we get ahead of ourselves and get into the episode, what have you guys been enjoying lately? Kate?
I got to review Severance Season 2, and I will say I am late to the Severance party. It came out 3 years ago. I just now got around to watching it because we needed to review it, and I've heard nothing but good things about it. So I binge-watched the first season, started my watch of the second season, finished the second season. Holy hell, it's good. Like, it's Severance is really good.
Did they release the whole season at once?
No, it's episodic.
Okay, you just have the advanced copy.
I have
copy.
Screeners.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I know that sometimes they just do like 3 episodes. So when you said that you saw the whole thing, I was like, did they send you the whole thing? But
yeah,
that's awesome.
Well, so Apple's also really good with sending all of their stuff ahead of time and like a month ahead of time. So like I will say,
cool. So you have time to watch it.
Yes, they make sure you don't have to speed run it in 2 days like I'm doing with another show that I'm reviewing this week. But yeah, it's really good. It is a wild swing for the fences. Like, it is chaotic and weird and even more sci-fi bizarre than the first season. And it somehow, like, is more emotional at the same time. So they balance that line really well and made everything really land. So.
All right. I'm into that. What about you, Matt?
So last year I did a preview for a game called New Cycle, and it kind of released in early access a little bit after my preview, and so I decided coming back a full year to see what they've done in a year. So I've just kind of been checking that out.
All right, nice. A lot of my time has been going into reading Absolution by Jeff Vandermeer, but I'm not done with it, so I'm going to save that for next week. But this week I finished playing The Planet Crafter. It's survival crafting game about terraforming a planet. I'm not going to say it's incredibly difficult, but if you like resource management and optimization and that kind of stuff, definitely scratch that for me. It also has online multiplayer. I want to say up to like 10 people, which feels like overkill.
It's never overkill.
I just played it with my wife and we had a great time with it. I think we sunk like 50 hours into it, but it was just like, oh yeah, like farm resources, build stuff, terraform the planet. That's the whole game. There's not like monsters or anything like that. It's just resource management and survival crafting. And yeah, I really liked it. So that would be my recommendation. And then last question for you all is, where can people find you and your writing online?
You can find all of my writing over at butwhytho.net. And if you're interested in Final Fantasy 14 housing, I have a column over on MMORPG. You can read. It is coming back this month, and you get to hear about why I actually don't like the latest update now that I've sat with it.
All right. And Matt?
Obviously, my work's on butwhytho.net. And yeah.
All right. And you can find me on Blue Sky, almost said Twitter. Find me on Blue Sky at Most Always Alex. I'm not really anywhere else at this point. I have the accounts. I'm just not using them.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Social media accounts. Find me at Oh My Myth Randir. I don't know where my brain's based. I'm
no
mostly
worries.
On Blue Sky. Yeah. Oh, rough. Look, it's like Texas's first prolonged cold of the new, winter. My brain is like a single brain cell attempting to stay warm. So.
That's fair. So yeah, with all that said, getting on to the main thing, casual viewing. And as we talked about, you guys read this. It was a long article, I'm not going to lie, but I did appreciate like the depth of it and kind of going into it. For those of you who are somehow unfamiliar with Netflix, they're a streaming service. It's not where they started. They started as a disc rental service, and specifically with the idea of disrupting an industry and taking over, which is not unique to Netflix. We want to be clear about that. But that was like, there was never a plan to just be online Blockbuster, if we're being real. So their whole idea was like, well, Blockbuster is limited by how many discs you can keep in a building. So what if we just get a depot and we ship everything? And then eventually they were like, what if we could store our discs at people's houses instead of here? And we let them check out like four things at a time. And then that sufficiently disrupted like the home rental market. And then when technology was ready for streaming, they were like, let's make that pivot to streaming. Ran both businesses side by side until they eventually cut off the DVD part. But that was also another massive disruption, this time to like cable TV and theaters.
But let's also be clear in this. Both Blockbuster and cable TV were doing everything they possibly could to make sure that everybody hated them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to be clear. Like, Blockbuster was not innocent in this. Like, their late fees were terrible. They actually... I have a friend who will defend Blockbuster a little bit because towards the end, they had an online disc rental service. And the really cool thing that they had was you could return your discs at a Blockbuster and just take another movie.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. And it was like, that's actually kind of rad. Like, I do like that, but I can see how they were a little too late to the game. They also, I don't even think this is anecdotal. I think it's true. Passed on the opportunity to buy Netflix.
Yes.
So it's one of those like, yeah, you could have stopped your own demise, but you didn't. So
also, like I said, the no late fee thing was a big promotional thing. But
oh,
then,
that was a huge part of how they disrupted.
And then, but I mean, because I think if Blockbuster tried to get even like, we don't have late fees, but it only like worked for like one Blockbuster per state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just, yeah, they... Like, I'm not going to say Netflix didn't have a good model here. They did. It's just that it was always with a hostile intent, which feels worth noting. And then this kind of pivoted to, like, they were initially buying up indie stuff, and then they started doing in-house production. And now they've sort of created this home media landscape where, like, home viewership is the focus. Like, yes, people still go to theaters. Some people, that's its own episode. Like, theater going is its own episode. But watching stuff at home is kind of the thing at this point.
I was gonna say, like, to that point, it is actually wild because during award season, they will not give you screeners for their films because they want you to watch them in theaters, but they're also forced into theatrical runs because of the Oscars. And it's a really weird thing where you're like, you're devaluing your own platform. What are you doing?
Yeah, where they're like, this isn't the right way to watch our movies. What are you doing? And it's like, No, it's an all right way to watch your movies. This is what you made them for.
So I will argue for another episode of the whole point of Netflix wanting to make their own content was the downfall of all of Netflix. Because I do think as just a distributor and licensing was great in what we saw. And then they said, we're going to make our own stuff. And then that became awful.
Yep. Which is actually, now that you bring that up, funny because so many studios who decided that they would become their own streaming platforms are having the opposite issue where they're like, oh, this is really hard.
Yep.
And that's why Sony has, I think, said we're never going to make our own platform because it's so much cheaper and easier to just like license our stuff out to other people.
Also, fun fact, the majority of international Netflix originals aren't actually Netflix produced productions. They are licenses for simulcasts in the United States or licenses for full release in the United States a lot of the time. The only exception is in Korea and Japan right now, where they've started funding different production studios and entered like binding contracts and built offices over there. So it's really weird because they're technically still just gobbling up licenses everywhere.
Yep.
But in a more insidious way where they're just like, oh, no, we made this. And I was like, you did not.
Oh, yeah. I remember the first time I noticed that it was like Arrested Development or something. But when they did their own season of it, now the Arrested Development poster said Netflix original. And I'm like, interesting, because 75% of this you had nothing to do with.
Yeah. It's like Disney making Jack Kirby a Disney hero when
legend,
he never worked
yes.
for Disney. Legend. Yes, Disney right? legend.
Like where he didn't live to see that. Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely insane. But, you know, corporate's going to corporate. So here we are. And yeah, so I think that this was kind of the pivot point of like home viewership becoming the thing, despite Netflix still wanting you to watch its stuff in theaters. And like, so at least to me, the defining thing of home viewing is that it's a distracting place to watch things. or rather it's more open to distraction. And like, that's not new, you know, like TV has always been at home watching shows, watching movies. But yeah, there's like, you could do chores, you can shop online, you can be sitting on the couch, like balancing your monthly budget and paying bills while a movie plays in the background. Things that I'm going to say shouldn't happen in a theater. I'm not going to say that they don't, because screen etiquette is out the window right now.
I was like, did you see those wicked children?
Yeah. So I'm like, it wouldn't surprise me if I saw somebody paying their bills and with a spreadsheet pulled up in the middle of a movie, but it shouldn't happen. And yeah, I think that that's kind of a big thing. And I feel like, as we'll get into, the lesson that Netflix learned here is like, you can gear what you're making to the fact that people are not focusing.
So I find it interesting that you bring up chores and everything else. Can we argue probably the bigger problem, since it has been around and why this seems to be arising, that phones and what we do with
phones are the biggest thing. I'm just thinking like people folding laundry, doing the dishes with the TV over their shoulder. But yeah, like just sitting on the couch, scrolling through your phone.
I would even argue, like, I guess to Matt's point of phones, like one, just being distracted, scrolling social media and all that stuff. But like they have shown in like a lot of cognitive studies that our brains have really been rewired. And a lot of the times people are like, oh, a sign of ADHD is that you need constant overstimulation or whatever. It's like, well, actually, this newer generation, like they have tested their brains. Mm-hmm. Either they all have ADHD or we have just inundated ourselves to consistently see things that we need to do 10 things at once. And that's what the algorithms have taught us. That's what everything's taught us. But I bring that up because I actually think, I was thinking about this as we were walking, podcasts, I think, have also trained people to do one thing while listening and do another thing. A lot of the ads for mm-hmm. podcasts are, you're doing this while folding your laundry, you're doing this while driving your car. And that's usually how those ads start. And I like am starting to very much think that the way people are consuming other media is in that form too, because of how often it gets done.
Oh yeah. And I think, and granted, we're playing into this a little bit, I think the other consequence of podcasts is, in the same way that like TGIF shows in the 90s taught you that all social problems could be resolved in 20 minutes, podcasts kind of teach you that expertise can be established in an hour.
Yes.
And it can't. Like, you could learn a lot, but like you're not going to be an expert on it. So yeah, they're like, the way that we consume things and what we consume has absolutely altered how our brains are functioning and interacting with the world around us. And that's a big part of this, because yeah, it's like, we, like, sure, you can say we need stimulation constantly, but it's like, well, we made portable dopamine bars that you can just carry in your pocket.
Yep.
And, like, maybe that was a mistake, like, on some level. And then, yeah, the other thing here, actually, the phones, this is a good transition, is that Netflix is available on basically everything, like, from a potato up to a movie theater screen. Like, you can watch it on a phone. You can literally, just as an experiment before this, and this is not Netflix, but just to see if I could do it, I booted up iTunes and I downloaded a movie that came out last year and I loaded it onto an iPod. Like, if I can watch Barbie on like a 2-inch screen and then also in a movie theater, like, yeah, like the idea that you're going to produce something that looks good on all of those formats doesn't exist.
As Dennis intended.
Exactly. Dune on the toilet. And yeah, so I think that that also kind of like, I'm not going to say that it's a lesson that Netflix learned, but I think it is a maybe like a hurdle that they have to overcome, but they don't really care about overcoming. How do you look good on a phone? How do you look good on a tablet, a laptop, a TV, a projector? The answer is that you don't.
Yeah, I was like, the answer is that you very much don't. And shout out to the little Mexican lady on my flight to LA, I think. She had a very old iPhone, like the one that my mom is holding on to so that it doesn't, like, waiting for mm-hmm. it to be bricked with a cracked screen, watching a K-drama with no headphones, by the way. I wasn't going to interrupt her living her life. And I was like, I was just like, oh, I like that one. And just like, oh, yeah, I love Park Seo-joon. And like, she had downloaded, like, for all of her flights, all of the different K-dramas that were available with Park Seo-joon on. And I was like, you go, girl. But also, damn. And I say this as somebody who loads her Kindle up with downloadable movies and TV shows in case the TV is broken on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, like, I feel like It's weird. I thought about it when we last flew without a backseat, like, TV. Mm-hmm. Like, why can't I not have something? Like, I need to watch something. If I'm going to sit somewhere for 3 hours on this plane, I need to have something in my eye holes. And it is a very weird existential crisis when you try to make yourself sit with silence for a little bit and you realize that you get angry.
Yeah, that's fair. I feel like when I look back at my pre-technology flying, it was always like, well, I'm going to bring, like, a book. Like, I have to have something. I'm going to have a Game Boy with me. Like, I have to have some form of entertainment. But again, going back to, like, now that we have smartphones, the idea that what you have with you isn't a video feels insane to a lot of people.
Yeah. I listened to an audiobook on the plane ride one time, and I was like, look at me. So sophisticated. Not watching a BTS concert that I've downloaded from Amazon.
Yeah, it's just, you have refinement and taste. And
exactly.
That's the BTS, not the audiobook. I did. This is not related to media, but I had a flight, and it was an evening, not a red eye, but just a night flight. So, you know, like, they're going to dim the cabin lights. And there was a guy across the aisle from me with his phone, like, 5 inches from his face, brightness maxed out. And then an hour into the flight, he turns it off and puts it away. And I'm like, oh, thank God. And he pulls out a second phone, also on maximum brightness, and puts it 5 inches from his face.
Oh my God.
It was absolutely insane. Lit up the whole corner that he was sitting in.
I will say, and then we can move off this topic, but to the ingenuity of people refusing to not watch their Netflix shows, there was a man I saw. He was like catty corner from me. It was an older plane, didn't have the little clips for your phone, didn't have TVs. He had rigged a vomit bag to hold up his phone by clipping it to the tray. And like, I know you got this from an Instagram hack, but holy crap. I did try for like a solid 30 minutes and I could not get it. But I feel like that's you learn the most about people when they fly. And what I learned is we are incapable of being alone with our being alone with our thoughts in a cylindrical metal tube.
Oh, yeah, it's impossible. No one wants that. I'm either asleep or watching something and probably not asleep.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that is a very brief kind of history of Netflix and how we got to where we are. So casual viewing. I feel like first we talk about this as a genre to explain it, because it's one of like the, what is it, like 30,000 something micro genres that Netflix has, because they really like, they get really, really fine tuned with what things are. And I don't know that there's actually specifics on what casual viewing is to them. So I just kind of went through what I think it is based on the article, based on what I've seen of it, based on what I've experienced of it. And so it's things that are like the easy phrase, high gloss, low value, where it's not that it's bad to look at inherently, but it's just not like great media. It's very like thoughtless in a way. Does that feel fair?
So go through it and then I will tell you, because casual viewing is technically around before Netflix, and I'll tell you before you as you so, go through this.
Yeah, so what I had was, I think it's things that are high gloss, low value, dumbed down writing. And the example in the essay is having characters say what they are doing so that people who are not paying attention with their eyes can still have a rough idea of what's happening. Things that are, and this is unique, I think, not to Netflix, but to the current era, things that are like shot centered or easy to cut and put onto a phone.
Yeah.
Which I realized, I was like, so do you guys know about Roman chariots and rocket boosters?
No.
You've never heard of this? So the size of a rocket booster is determined by Roman chariot wheel distance. So Roman chariots were all built to a specification, like military chariots. And then those chariots made the ruts on roads through Europe. And then the people who were making carts were making their wheel width to match those ruts so it wouldn't break their wagons. And then those wagon makers made the first train cars. Train cars escalated to train tunnels. And then where the boosters were being made to where they were being launched had a train tunnel. And so they had to make it fit. So Roman chariots led to rocket booster diameter. It's insane. In the same way, the fact that phones have to connect from your ear to your mouth now have affected how Netflix cinematography works because they want it to be vertically centerable.
Yes.
That this is by far insane. Some and of the worst stuff to look at. And it's very
that is the entirety of the Avatar The Last Airbender live action.
It's all centered. It's all center shots. That sucks so bad.
Matt, wasn't it like I was watching it and he walked into like the loft and he was like, what is this? Why is it like that? Why is there only one thing in focus?
It looked like they filmed the whole thing in like portrait mode, where there was like one main character in the middle, and then everything was just like blurred. And it, as everybody talked,
so
as
you
they
can
moved,
clip it for the TikToks.
I know, but as they moved throughout the entire world, that's all you saw was just like one main thing and a bunch of blur. One main thing and a bunch of blur. And I was like, what is going on?
I hate that. I do hate that as you describe it. So yeah, it's that, and it's, again, these are just things that are best enjoyed at half attention. Like, they are gearing what they are making to the fact that you are only sort of focused. And so yeah, that was my definition of what casual viewing content is. It's not necessarily like an actual genre or type of story or type of storytelling. It is a type of filmmaking.
It's a medium.
Yeah.
It's a medium.
So, Kate, what definition do you have?
It is low-cost viewing. That is just how simply it has been defined. Those are your happy-go-lucky sitcoms, your reality TV shows, and also your David Attenborough nature documentaries. So essentially, like, the way casual viewing was described, like, even before this, and it's funny because I feel like the way that you described it is, like, all the things that we hate Netflix doing, and if you view it from a critical lens are the things you knock it for, right? Like, I feel like you just described Rebel Moon. If I had been doing something else while watching that movie, I think it would have been 10 times better. That being said, traditionally, though, it's why a lot of people invested into a lot of sitcoms. It's also why a lot of people invested into reality TV. Because essentially, while it's low cost for studios to make it, it's also very low effort and low cost for people at home, especially in those slots where people are making dinner, people are taking care of the kids, people are coming back from school.
Okay.
They're designed for you to be able to come in, move back out, and then come back in. It's actually a big staple in traditional network television where you can jump into it at any single point. It's what made syndication shows so good because you can watch it at 3 p.m. in a gym like I did with Supernatural and then go home and to rewatch everything.
You know what?
That's what it was. Now it's taken on a different meaning because of what it's created, but that's what it was.
Okay, that makes sense. And also that explains, and I mean, broadcast television explains this too, but when watching older shows on DVD, how often you will see a character walks into a room and is like, what are you guys doing? And it fades to black, and then it fades back to the scene, and they go, what are you guys doing? And so it's like, oh, because when people caught it during the commercial break, you wanted them to have that establishing line.
Yep.
And it feels really awkward now, but when we were watching things being broadcast live with commercial breaks, it totally made sense to do.
Yeah, no, like every show still now for just when we watch as much HGTV, they always show, and then they reshow the first like 20 seconds of where they left off. And it comes off, like you said, very awkward because it just cuts to black and comes back. And you're like, why do I have to keep replaying? You're like, oh yeah, there are commercials.
Yep. Where you watch the House Hunters like meet John and Stacy, and then it cuts back and it's like, so John and Stacy. And it's like, yeah, we just talked about this. Like, I know them. It's fine.
Well, and like the other thing too is like when you watch K-dramas, especially the ones that Netflix buys are the ones that get simulcasted week by week. And at the start of each episode, they will replay like the literal last 10 minutes of the last episode.
Oh,
It is not shot for shot, but it's like a slightly different perspective of the thing you
recap.
Just watch. Yes. It's smartly done if you are watching it as weekly television. If you are binge watching it, you usually are like me and just skip to the mark where it's done so I can skip it all.
Yeah, it's, man, weird leftovers from old media that just, you would think they would edit it out for digital broadcast, but they just, I guess that's too much effort. Speeding up Seinfeld for syndication is fine, but editing out those beats doesn't work. I don't know. Film production is beyond me. Anyway. So yeah, all of those things, casual viewing, home viewership, Netflix eventually marries with its model of just like not even its model, just with what it is, because ultimately they are a business of making money, not making art. They are about getting customers. And so when that meets up with casual viewing, you get something that to me is destructive to the whole, to the entirety of filmmaking and television making as an art. What you end up with is this thing where keeping the screen on, keeping the subscription going is the goal. And I think part of their model is the gym membership model, where they just hope you forget to cancel. Because if you're watching things, that's putting stress on their servers and that's making them pay for stuff. But if you just pay them monthly and don't, and which admittedly, like I've been guilty of that, where like I will go like 2 or 3 months without watching anything on Netflix. Because there just isn't anything that I'm wanting to watch on there. But then I will also watch like only Netflix for a month and all of my other subscription services get a break. But that that's kind of part of it. But yeah, I in reading through that essay and trying to kind of think of like what I know of Netflix through the headlines and my own experience, like, so they went for high output. That's one thing. Like they crank things out. And it's not a guarantee for a quality drop, to be clear. Like in the 90s, there were some movie studios that were taking big swings like that of how often they were putting stuff out in the studio era of Hollywood. I think what you do get is a lot of movies that get forgotten because people like, there's only so much room for classics. There's only so much room in our cultural memory for like things to be good. But they're very much like throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks and spending too much money on it. And then something else that I thought was interesting, and this was in the essay, is that everything is advertised as being some kind of a record breaker, whether that's as like a means of pumping their own product up or drawing in new viewers. But like somehow everything is a record breaker or is on trend to be a top 10 Netflix movie of all time. And yeah, and it's really it's to pull in customers and make them into viewers and to please investors. Like that's the pipeline that they're after there.
So you could make the argument of, one, we use a lot of ESPN stats with this stuff, which I don't even know where we're at with half of what the viewership stuff is.
Explain ESPN stats.
An ESPN stat is something where we basically, you are the top of something, some random type of instance. Like I am the number one person for the first 2.5 minutes of doing X.
Yes. This is the fastest California-born Kansas City Chiefs running back of all time.
Who went to this university.
What does that mean?
Yeah, who went to this university and did this stuff. So there's a lot of that. I do wonder, which obviously we kind of go full circle what I mentioned at get-go of how we got here in general, disrupting blockbuster things. Kind of crazy how they took the casual viewing and it made it worse. But to kind of go to these ESPN stat stuff, you can kind of argue that, one, a lot of they're now producing and ramping up massive production. So let's not act like they haven't made anything for a long time, but they were only making like 1 or 2, 3 shows. And so while I do think they probably do cook the books and make a lot of like weird like stats of like the record breaking things, I do think to some extent these records are actually semi-genuine in the point that like for the longest time of Netflix existence, which is probably what, early 2000s, they did not make anything. And then they were only making maybe 1 to 2 shows. And so if you look at the subscription numbers that they have now, especially from post-pandemic stuff of like after there and then in general, like how much shows you're going to put out and with the larger IPs of what people are watching, there probably is to an extent a value of just the rule of numbers that you probably do have a lot more watching.
That's true. Yeah.
You can argue like we're talking
about here.
There's
probably some legitimacy.
Yeah. Like
I think.
Sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I think the one thing that they, and this is highlighted in the essay, the one way that they kind of like fudge the numbers that doesn't work for me is adding up the minutes watched and dividing it by the runtime of the film to determine views, where it's like, oh, two of us watched half of this movie and Netflix is like, that's one. And it's like, is it? Because we both turned it off halfway through.
But would you rather be two?
Well, that's fair. I feel like they said... The problem is how low they put the bar, because it was 2 minutes counts as an intentional choice to watch something. So if 100 people watch 2 minutes of it, that counts. Which, when we get to their other things that they've done, like having stuff autoplay because you left the cursor over it a little bit too long, and it's like you stepped away to go get your popcorn and you come back and the movie's 2 minutes in and Netflix is like, we're counting it. And so like that's where you get to some weird stuff.
But it's also very weird, too, because shows will not get renewed if they're not watched all the way through. We have talked with a few animation studios who have specifically said, if you stop watching our show in between, or like after it starts, you are seen as somebody who started watching and dropped off and not counted towards actually getting them renewed because you didn't finish it.
Yeah. Which, and actually, so here's where that becomes a problem, is I was watching through Blue Box as it came out. Episode 12 dropped. There's no preview for the next episode. I assumed it was done. And then they dropped an episode 13 like 2 weeks later. And I was like, oh, shoot, I have to like get back into this. But like, you gave me none of the cues that you'd been putting in place that the show was still going. Yeah. So I almost turned into that dropped off viewer. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's frustrating. But yeah, Matt, I do get what you're saying of like, they weren't always making stuff. So there is a little bit of legitimacy to their numbers. There's just some places where they choose to mess with it and get real creative to make it look good.
No, absolutely.
Which, I mean, every industry does it, but yeah, we're talking about Netflix. So, yeah. And I should say, I don't know how much of this is exclusive to Netflix. I think they're just the most prominent example.
Yeah, I would say, like, essentially, like, the Netflix model has been so successful, quote, like, quotations here.
Yeah, that financially
everybody,
successful.
Yeah, that everybody is running the same gambit that they are. And I would say the only other person that, like, comes up to them is going to be Disney, mm-hmm. because Disney choices have impacted everything. But yeah, it happens everywhere. The secrecy of the numbers specifically, though, is something that Netflix forged. And I think mm-hmm. that's what sucks, because we used to be able to see Nielsen data and actual like viewership watches,
yep.
In a more tangible way. And we just don't understand.
Well, I mean, so I will say the other problem with the Nielsen viewership is they never wanted to budge for what they did.
That's fair.
And so while this goes all hand in hand, which I feel like we're kind of getting off this topic into something else, but they don't go, but like whether it's Blockbuster, whether it's cable TV, Nielsen viewership and everything else, their refusal to change allowed Netflix to disrupt a lot of this stuff. And so while Netflix mm-hmm. is definitely the bad person, them refusing to change any of their ways, then people are like, these are just a better, Netflix became a better option. Because when it came to viewership, they were like, we don't count day after, we don't count streaming numbers, we don't count anything. Mm-hmm. So unless you were there at 7 p.m. on a Thursday that watched that, you did not count. And so we saw for a while their shows were just getting dinged, like that they were, nobody was watching it. And then you looked at like mm-hmm. their Hulu numbers, because that Hulu was a big 24-hour afterwards, and they were just booming, but they didn't care. It sucks, because it's like we had a lot of bad people involved in all this, but it was like, mm-hmm. it wasn't like Netflix completely came in and said, and we destroyed everything, as in these people refused to change that left opportunities for then somebody to come and destroy all this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting, because like, I know like the Nielsen rating system was, it's a set top box that basically just intercepts what you're watching, feeds that number to a database.
Yep.
And I don't know that you could get, well, you probably could get people to sign up to have a web browser extension or whatever on their house that is intercepting what they're watching on streaming services. Yeah. But, you know, Nielsen just didn't go that direction.
Yeah. Cause like we had a Nielsen box growing up on our, like on our TVs. Like it was on my TV, cause I watched mm-hmm. the most, and like the family TV. And it would just, like, report that sent to you in a little box. Like, there are Chrome browser extensions for everything, and there are app extensions for everything. Like, it should actually be easier for people to get, like, opt into app metrics.
Oh, yeah. It would just require Netflix to have honest numbers about what's getting watched. Right. And they don't want that, because it's, I mean, it also gives them power, because people are like, oh, they say everybody's watching it. But I think what you have to actually look at is the broader conversations. Like, I know people watched Ted Lasso. Like I saw the discourse. I saw the conversation. I saw the shock and disbelief when someone in a friend group said, I haven't watched it. Like, I know people watch that show. Netflix tells me people watch things, and I'm like, did they? Because I don't see those conversations and that passion coming.
So one, I'm going to blow this up before we go down this road of, also, everybody says that about Succession, but what they found out was nobody watched Succession. Compared to most HBO shows, just everybody wrote about Succession.
Oh, everyone
in the
who
media.
Watched it talked about it.
And therefore, it was like one of those, Succession was probably like the eighth or ninth, like highest viewed show for HBO that year. But they were the number one by a mile most talked about and even written and covered show of that year.
Interesting. Also, I realize now that what we're doing is we're pivoting to talking about engaged viewership, because that's the thing that we like as people, and that's not what this is about.
Right. So we probably need to switch back.
Staring at the bad thing of casual viewership, and we're like, nope, gotta go to the happy place. And it is people respecting art. That is the happy place.
I will say, I'm not gonna ride and die for casual viewership, but I have an argument for it as we keep moving.
Oh yeah, I want to talk about the positive of it, because we have all engaged in it to some degree, at, you know, either presently or in the past. Like, it's not an inherently bad thing.
I can say that Matt hasn't. He literally
Matt.
I'm here to be old man at a cloud when we get here. Just let's go.
I mean, I think we can go there. I was just going to lay out more of the things that Netflix does to try to keep your account going, but that's not super important. Like,
okay. So, Kate, for you, for casual viewing, because this is a big thing of, like, there are some positives of how people look at it. Positives with quotations.
Positives that just show the ills of the rest of the world. Like capitalism. Mm-hmm. I have a full-time job. I run the website, which is also a full-time job. I don't have time to watch things when I am not doing something else.
Yeah.
And I understand that when I say this, people will be like, oh, but does that mean that Kate's criticism is any less than? No, like, it's not. I think, but because a lot of those shows, like, I dedicate my time to watching the shows and doing it. But for pleasure, like, the stuff that I get to watch on my own, I don't know when I get to do that. Like, I literally cannot do that. I have fallen behind in watching anime because I have to wait for dubs, because I cannot watch it if it subs, because the only time I get to watch TV shows that I want to watch that I'm not producing articles on is when I am doing other things. It's when I'm in my workday, it's when I'm writing, it's when I'm doing things. And so casual viewership, I don't defend the model of that has broken down a lot of TV writing and a lot of film writing, I do defend the fact that people in a lot of situations are forced into casual viewership because of the lives they have to maintain, because of how hard it is to just find spaces in your life where you are not working, especially the poorer you get. And that is, like, my only thing. I wish I didn't have to do it. Like, I wish I watched more K-dramas, but I have to wait for dubs. Like, I can't watch international stuff right now if I'm not reviewing it, if there is no dub. Because I just have no time. Yeah, I mean,
when a season is essentially 10 movies, watching that subtitled is a commitment.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard. It's why I started doing it where, like, if I was on the Peloton, I would watch an episode of something. If I am walking at my desk to do my, like, daily walk on my treadmill, I will watch an episode of something. But outside of that, like, 1 hour of time I can scrape away for working out, I have no other way to watch anything that isn't inundated with something else I am also trying to do for myself, because I am one of the people in this lovely here economy who has commodified every single thing that I do, which includes playing video games, watching TV, and reading. It gets hard. And I think that that hustle culture, that necessity to work, especially as prices continue to go up everywhere, have made people not dedicate time to themselves to do what they want to do. I watched a movie in three parts, like, 2 weeks ago, because I took a bath I took three baths that week, and it felt great to just sit in a bathtub and watch a movie, but you can only stay in there for so long. And I think that, like, that's what we miss when we kind of, like, make it reductionary. I think there are two things happening. I think that there are people who are just actively not looking to engage with media in a deeper way. And I think that those are the people that Netflix is trying to capitalize on. But I also think people are just more overworked than they ever have been. And if you want them to keep subscribing to your service and watching your TV shows, you need to try and meet them where they are. I don't think that this is the right way. But
yeah, I'd agree. And I think that, to go with that, like, there are also, like, I'm just incredibly busy as a person sometimes. And it's like, I can either lock in and watch this show and it's going to be an hour of my time, or I can watch this show and also knock out a little bit of that game that I've been playing for the last 3 months, because that's how long it takes me to play a game sometimes. And so it's like, yeah, I'm going to grab my Steam Deck and I'm going to boot that up and I'm going to put the show on and I'm going to do both. And then it's on me to balance that awareness of, like, pause the game, something important is happening, you know, go back. And so making media that fills that gap, I have been vilifying it a lot. I guess I should say there is a place for it.
You should vilify what Netflix is doing. You can still watch a complex TV show, but...
Yes. I was going to say the place for it is smaller than Netflix thinks it is, yes. Is the problem.
Because if I am doing something else and something starts happening in the TV show... I will stop doing the other thing and lock in. And then when the next episode starts, I'll go back to diverting my time. People can do that. You don't need to explain to me everything.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that this is kind of the thing that I was, as I was reading the essay and outlining this episode and everything, I was like, what is the actual impact to viewers? And we talked about it a little bit earlier with portable dopamine machines. And all that stuff of is our attention span going down? Is our media literacy going down? We do have this thing of are we consuming, or I think the phrase I put in the notes was consumption versus consideration. Are you watching this for it to be consumed and destroyed, or are you watching it to gain something? I honestly don't know that I have an answer to what's the outcome for the viewer. I know where I'm at with media because I try to be intentional with my time when I can. But for the average person just hopping on Netflix and hitting, I forgot that they had a play something button that literally is I don't care. Just make it not quiet. My thoughts are too loud and scary. California.
Why are you attacking me?
I do the same thing where I'm I need to not think about the outside world right now.
Well, but what I will say, though, is for those, thoughts scary, you know what I do? I go find a reality TV show where I don't actually have to watch an unwinding narrative. And I think that that's the difference. There are places to clock in where you give somebody that good feeling show that lets them keep the scary thoughts at bay. And then there are times you have long narratives. And I will preface what Matt is about to say, that as his wife, I can confirm he does not casually watch anything. And it's a problem because I watch stuff alone. Matt, take it away.
So one, as a person who does not care about art the way you two do, this is a very disappointing to hear both of you talk like this. I don't. Obviously, we can talk about the way sitcoms and casual viewing, what we talked about earlier. I do think that is a great way, especially when you integrate commercials and other stuff of In and Out, because there are definitely sitcoms that I understand when you sit back and look at it, that's how it works. I don't know what we're doing right now with the as much as the writing terrible, obviously, but that doesn't bother me. I mean, that doesn't bother me as much as the cinematography of how we're doing weird stuff, which is kind of both for casual viewing, but
That'll be we have to have that conversation after, is what's the impact to the artist?
Yeah, whatever. But For me, the problem I see with a lot of this stuff is we don't take our time to watch the things, and I don't think people actually engage with anything. I, for the most part, only do one thing at a time. I purposely only do one thing at a time. I do not watch TV and play games together. I cannot do that. I do not want to do that. I don't even I'm still a person where if we could keep the internet at a desk, that would be great.
I love that idea, actually. I'm increasingly into that idea.
I still focusing when I play, I like playing my game. I do not like handheld for the most part. I do not mind being on the airplane. I'll put on some music, I guess. But I do think this weird part of people feeling they need to have dopamine at all time is detrimental in a lot of ways. I think it has devalued a lot of the way we do writing. I think it has devalued a lot of media literacy. I think we definitely have shorter attention spans. I definitely think you should engage with these quote-unquote bad thoughts you have. And I do think part of the problem we do have with a lot of people is they will not engage with actually a lot of the quote-unquote bad thoughts that you have. And as a person who's had a lot of bad thoughts and has made an entire career in a field of which is nothing but bad thoughts, welcome to being in the sciences of we're killing everything, being able to engage and maneuver and handle a lot of these bad thoughts allows you to basically function a lot better, to understand a lot more, and to just... enjoy things a lot differently. And I guess for me, it gets hard when I see stuff like this, because as a person who watches this stuff, I can't watch a lot of this types of shows and everything that comes on, or if we put it in everything, because it just comes off very bad and dumb and horribly thing that it bugs me because it does not feel like things are clicking right. And one of the reasons why I did want to do this, because I had not thought about sitcom, which I think work better with commercials, like I said earlier, of it made a lot of sense to me, like, oh, so there is a reason why I have not watched a lot of Netflix-type produced shows in the last few years, or what we're doing, because watching them is just so annoying and so much of, like, I don't understand what we're doing here. Yeah. And so it felt like
it does make me feel more justified as an old man, where I'm just like, when I ask myself, like, is TV getting worse? The answer is, like, some of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And it's not just that I'm not keeping up with the times. It's that it objectively, the writing's
getting
worse.
No, that's been the wild part of, like, no, I think there's genuinely some stuff that I'm like, oh, I'm probably just a little too old, I guess. And there's other stuff that I'm like, no, you are just terrible. But to Kate's point of, like, how watching things, I do not like watching TV, and I do not like watching movies with her for the most part, because I am very much, this is what we do. Please don't talk. We're going to watch this. Please don't ask me questions. Don't show me things. If you're on your phone, why are you here? Please leave. Like, I don't know what we're doing here. And I do think checking things, depending on what we're watching, can happen, because honestly, I think because of the drag that we get from some of these shows, I do probably tend to check my phone more than what I used to. Because
I thought you meant like the IMDb search, where it's like, where do I know her from?
Oh, no.
What was she in?
Oh, I mean, I've done that too. But no, I think it has allowed of, like, there is, makes sense of, like, wow, there's so
he
much
has
downtime.
A time limit. He has it, like, I will say, if I pull up my phone really quickly to send a text or check something, it's fine. Whatever. If he says, who is that, and I do the IMDb check, it's fine. If my head is down for like more than 3 minutes, he will pick up the remote, pause it, and ask me, are you done? And then I'm like, yes. And then we continue watching.
No, the thing is, I do not like watching stuff with subtitles in general. I like being able to listen, which also the problem, because they have terrible mixing the way they do sound these days. But like, it's not I'm like anti-subtitle necessarily. But what I've learned, and why I'm kind of becoming more anti-subtitle, is because people are not actually watching and listening to a lot of these shows. They're doing other types of stuff, and they just want to be able to read and not have to actually pay attention. And so I'm just like, oh, I don't like this. And so it does very much of, like, I've had before where Kate will have subtitles, but and it's like, okay, fine, I will let the subtitles go. But then she's just talking. And I'm like, cool, so you just wanted subtitles so we didn't have to worry about hearing anything. And so, no, I have a problem.
I'm guilty of that. Where if we're watching something subtitled, I am more likely to talk and interrupt it, because I'm just like, it doesn't matter. I'm not talking over anything.
Exactly.
And, like, that's how I think about
it. And that's what's become making me more anti-subtitle, to be honest. Like, I'm not against subtitle, but I'm very anti, because most people just talk now, because, like, you don't have to hear anything. Just read. And I'm like, well, go get a book. And why are we here?
So I do think the funny thing overall is I think this is really, like, in our household, we watch international content. Like, I would say for when me and Matt are sitting down at the TV, about 75% of it, maybe more, is international content. International movies, international films. From no particular country, it is just international. And a lot of that reason is because the writing is better. The characters are better. Yeah. And I think that it very specifically does come from the fact that there are changes that are happening in Netflix-produced things that aren't happening in stuff that they've licensed. And I've been noticing that over time because, to Matt's point, when you do lock in on something, how do I say this? When you lock in on something that has been developed for casual viewing, you do not give it a good score.
Yes.
As a critic.
When you lock in, you realize that you weren't supposed to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And as you see that more often, it's kind of like, I don't want to watch anything.
Yeah. And it is why, like, I have been watching less K-dramas, because I haven't had time. And it is because outside of just, like, the regular network television recap at the beginning, you have to pay attention. Not even that it's just a foreign language, but that they're not holding your hand.
Yeah.
And I do feel like when we get some more complex shows, people complain this is over convoluted and stuff. And I'm like, I don't understand why. And I'm like, did you actually watch the show? And to be fair, all I've learned is most people actually did not watch the show, or they quote unquote watched the show. And I like I said, to the point of, like, I understand people are busier, and so I don't want to say bad, but you do need to give your brain a break, which is the weird part of, like, Kate also learned about me of, like, the times that people I've worked at home even before we had the pandemic and everything of like, I probably told this story even on this podcast, not of like, I always go to like the kitchen and I sit down at the table and our wherever and I don't do anything and I just eat. And Kate thought it was the weirdest thing and did all this stuff. And she was like, why you do this? I'm like, one, you need to quit staring at screen, especially if you're home. But two, you honestly just need to give your brain does not need to be wired like that and let your brain rest and not whatever else and just like stop focusing because you will overstimulate it, which is I think to a degree of how we talk about rewiring our brain. And I think to be honest, what we've shown from some of the science, whether we're completely there or not, of people don't put their phone down, they don't focus on things, and they literally try and do seven things at once. The whole thing of it's fascinating to me of like we grew up hearing you cannot multitask, only for the next generation to say we cannot do one single task. We have to multitask. And I'm like, but we already learned that you improved that you can't do that.
I didn't grow up that way.
Yeah.
Huh?
I didn't grow up that way. You've seen my mother. Yeah. No, you've seen my, like, I have to, like, my mom, like, literally bred me in a tube to make me do multiple things at once because she said I must always know what is going on.
But you seem to never know what's going on.
I know! It's a problem!
And that's the problem! Like, and that's, we figured out the problem.
I will say, one dumb thing that I did do that helped was when I noticed that I was, like, on my phone more than I wanted to be, I set up a little automation that when I open social media apps, it would pop up with a prompt that says, did you have a notification? And if I hit no, it closed the app.
That is really cool.
That's cool.
And it was like, yeah, this is a cool way to kind of like call myself out and like make sure that I'm keeping myself in check, that I'm not just like opening Instagram and scrolling forever or opening, you know, Twitter or Blue Sky or whatever. And actually, you know what I've loved with Blue Sky, and this is we're onto time management and attention spans, but the fact that I can hit the bottom of my feed on Blue Sky and I'm like, I already saw that post and I know that nothing below it is new.
No,
and I can just stop. Oh, actually, I have a relevant tangent if you guys are up for it.
Yes.
You go.
Which is that I missed it because I wasn't on Twitter that day, but apparently there was some discourse over whether or not books written before 1970 were too hard.
Yes. That was a discourse because nobody knew what the Odyssey was, and then we learned that nobody can read anything.
Oh, I forgot that no one knew what the Odyssey was, and they were like, this is why Nolan's the greatest, because he finds these old stories.
There is an AI bot that will go in and simplify sentences. Like, that losing literacy is a whole other topic that I do think we should cover. I think this is a part of it.
No, I do.
Well, because now I'm just like, okay, could the people who only engage in Netflix's casual viewing content, could you sit them down and watch? I'm not even going to say like, oh, can you follow Hamlet? Could you follow a modernization of
Hamlet?
Could
you follow Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet?
No. Yeah,
or is that too many moving parts? Too complicated?
The answer is no.
It's like Matt, just like, the children are not all right.
I don't think it's just the children anymore. I think some of the grown adults are not all right either.
That's very true. No, but like, I will say...
Let's work our way back.
Yes, going back to casual viewing. No, I do think that there is... I think the issue here, ultimately, is that casual viewing has been a thing, and there are specific types of programs geared towards that. If you need that in your life, that is what you do. I have a standard rotation of reality TV shows that I watch when I just need noise.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the issue is because Netflix is this awful capitalistic gobbling monster, it must swallow everything in its path like Pac-Man, and that includes casual viewing, to the detriment of art and storytelling. And I actually think that is one of the key reasons why Apple television shows are not getting, one, Apple TV is not promoted as well as it should be as a platform to know that is there. But having reviewed so much Apple TV, you have to lock in. Like, you cannot detach from it. You have to pay attention to it. And I think, even if you were to take people who are traditional Netflix watchers and were to drop them into Apple TV Plus, I think they would have issues with it. I know a while back we did an issue, we did an episode talking about, like, do people really like sci-fi? I think that Apple TV, by far, has the best host of sci-fi television series, some of the best writing, but a lot of it is slow burn that requires investment and understanding of the world that you're being dropped into, and it's not spoon-fed. And I also think that makes it harder for people who are used to like a shotgun approach on what you see, because sci-fi within the American context has become Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon. And that's not what it is. Like, at the very core of what sci-fi is, sci-fi uses science to showcase problems in the human condition. And I think that we're seeing detriments and issues, I would argue, specifically for genre filmmaking and genre television because of that. Because genre, like, when it comes to comedy, when it comes to horror, when it comes to sci-fi, when you're engaging with things that aren't just like a traditional drama, a romance, whatever, I think that there are so many more elements that have to lock into place storytelling wise that when you try to do it from a casual viewing perspective and over explain everything, you lose the importance of the world that you've built.
I think even the story that you're trying to tell, like when your subtext is by a producer being forced to be text, like when a character has to lay out like, you can't do this because then I'll have to do X, Y, Z, rather than just saying like, you can't do this and leaving it to the viewer to fill in that very basic, like, can you remember why that's a bad thing for them to do? Like, that you shouldn't have to have that explained to you.
Heists. I have watched 3 Netflix heist movies. Horrible. Atrocious. Some of the worst heist movies ever produced, because not what you do. It's not what the genre does.
Yeah. Oh my
The fun
God.
Of a heist
oh,
time, movie is time paying out, attention time. And trying to catch on.
Time like, out. Time out. Is this why Glass Onion is so bad?
Yes! This is why Glass Onion is not a good movie.
Yeah. Glass Onion boils down to the scene of, it's so smart, or it's so dumb it's smart, and him saying, no, it's just dumb. That's the whole movie in 2 lines.
Because that was that is my explicit problem with Glass Onion. It did not trust its audience, and it kept trying to over-explain stuff and re-implement scenes that made no sense, and they had a whole entire, like, monologue for, like, 15 minutes that was dumb and ruined any part that was good of that movie. I still think overall it's still good, but, like, that whole section of the movie is awful to me, and the more I've sat with it, I've disliked that movie because I'm like, I don't understand why you're trying to tell a mystery, and then you gave away the mystery, like, 20 minutes, and you had to keep killing anything that seemed mysterious about the mystery movie.
Which, if I remember correctly, Knives Out was a movie that came out in the festival circuit and Netflix bought. Netflix didn't produce.
Oh, interesting. No, that's worth considering. But yeah, I think, and this is kind of where we get to like the, well, what's the impact for the artist? Because now it's, you know, making these script changes, making these visual changes.
So I have a question though, because we're talking 2021 here. When officially did Netflix ramp up actually making their own content? Because the problem I have with this is at this point, 2021, even now...
That's a good question.
Because they're probably... Because we know we have, what, House of Cards is what, maybe 2012?
Mm-hmm. I think Netflix started ramping up production right around 2019, 2020, if I were to guess.
And so, cool, so they had 2 years of making movies, and they're like, how could you not
they had a couple TV shows, a couple seasons.
And I think that's been the interesting part when we talk about this, is people seem to forget, which for better or worse, of like, Netflix for, at this point, probably still half of its life was just a distributor.
Yeah.
It's wild how they've done so much.
Well, and I also think too, like, you could technically just go back to the entire cast of Orange is the New Black.
Yes.
Like, Laverne Cox literally took off because of the opportunity that character on Orange is the New Black gave her. Uzo Abuda, Finn Wolfhard, like, you have a lot of people that, like, and this is like my big thing. While I believe that there has been a severe issue when it comes to a dip in quality from Netflix, I also think that the ability that streaming gave as a whole to take more chances on content led to more actors being seen. And I think that that very specifically, you end up with a lot of people on, like, having launching pads from there. I do think Laverne Cox is one of the best examples. I know Lena Waithe as well started on the, I forget what it's called, the Hasan Minhaj show.
I think, yeah, so I think ultimately what it boils down to is, like, the impact for the creatives involved, or it's not necessarily, like, the opportunity, it's, or even the career that comes after, it's what they are being forced to make in the process. Because
so here's my only problem with this. I don't disagree with Netflix having problems and everything else, and it's, and obviously the canned question says explicitly streamers, and it's been hard because I do think as they've ramped up, we've gotten a decline in quality. But as we've said before, like Netflix for the longest time, people loved working with them. They did that. They shelled out a lot of money, gave a lot of people opportunities. And then clearly we had problems with what we're doing now. But also, how many Star Wars people, how many people have been named a Star Wars director at this point for like one show?
Oh yeah.
And so like we can argue the larger scale of decrease of creatives. Netflix is making poor content because they want to do casual viewing. They want to get these people that are barely paying attention. Why is Disney making poor content?
That's a very good question.
Because are they doing the same principle? Because if not, they're writing just as bad. A lot of their cinematography just as bad, if not worse.
Yeah, and, but it costs twice as much.
Yeah. And so it is interesting of like, how much I do want to know what, probably as we kind of keep on the casual viewing, kind of get over here, of like, do we think kind of the reach of Netflix is, whether this came out or kind of how this has been going the last few years, do we think that's reaching other streaming platforms? And TV or even film?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think some of Netflix's choices have definitely leaked out. I mean, I think the point of, yeah, like how, why are Disney shows the way that they are if they're Disney? Like, Netflix has the excuse of we are babies at making TV. Disney is Disney. And Disney has owned how many other TV channels and made shows there? And for them to play dumb and say, like, well, we don't really know how to make a TV show is, like, that's not true. Like, you absolutely know how to make a TV show.
I think the other night we were in Discord with people and we were just naming different Disney Channel original movies that were absolute bangers. Disney knows what they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
Because the funny part with the Netflix thing, which obviously we probably need to wrap this up of, it always feels like Netflix is the Facebook and Disney's the Google. They're both obviously terrible, and you can argue a lot of ways that the other is obviously more terrible. One just got way better PR and more seemed more necessity to the audience person versus the other one that they feel they can cut out easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although there is something a little bit more sinister about Disney because they're like, we're going to take root in your childhood and your nostalgia, and we're going to make it painful for you to like disconnect from this.
Look, I wrote an entire like final paper in my like PhD talking about how Disney's entire push towards monopoly would be allowed because they ate up the entire American mythology and hit every demographic they could. They have princesses and fantasy, they have superheroes, and they have sports. Those are the only things Americans care about building their American mythos around.
And now they have superheroes too.
That's what I said. Superheroes was the second one. Because it was right after. Okay. So when I was doing my doctoral work, it was right after the Marvel buyout and the Star Wars buyout.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, they really did. They just snatched it all up. And, they rooted themselves in a way that is impossible, like inoperable is the word for it.
Someone call it a malignant tumor.
Some may call Disney a malignant tumor. Is that the episode? Does that do it for this week?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get
Jason, I think we found our title. Some may call Disney a malignant tumor, : an exploration of Netflix and casual viewing. But that does it for this week. If you want more, we've got it. But Why That Was on Blue Sky, you can subscribe to our newsletter, donate to the site. Do both of those things by going to butwhytho.net/support and then find us on Blue Sky at butwhytho.net. Everything that you guys donate, it goes towards keeping the site going, paying our writers, making the content that you enjoy. So if you like what we do, just please consider subscribing and donating. We really appreciate it. Kate, Matt, thank you so much for joining me. I had a lot of fun this conversation. And thank you at home for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye.